the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. 720 WGN. All right, Richard Roper has stepped into the studio, and Richard Roper has seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and, well,
I think you, I based on the review, I
the four stars,
it.
Four stars, best movie of the year. Somebody asked me on one of the social media sites, well, how many Oscar nominations would you predict? Which is a tough thing, but I can't imagine it not getting at least 10 Oscar nominations. Best Picture, Best Director, Best Writer, that would be all Quentin Tarantino. Best Actor, Brad Pitt should be nominated. Margot Robbie, Best Supporting Actress, Cinematography, Editing, et cetera, et cetera. And I wish they would give it to costumes because it's got that perfect 1969 look. But you know how they are with the with those costume awards. You
they
have
like
to
the
be,
extravagant.
Yeah, they like either the crazy extravagance of, you know, the space travelers, or you got to be one of those incestuous British royalty people from the 17th century. They love those. Oh, the costumes are perfect. Oh, my gosh. Mary,
bloody
Queen of
good.
Margaret, Scots the 7th looks incredible. And I'm like, this, I love the, you know, all the attention to detail. So I think I should start by just, you know, setting up the premise for you guys.
Okay.
Because I think a lot of people, they know that it's set in the late 60s Hollywood, and they've seen some of the posters and the trailers, and they went and it's got something to do with the Manson murders. All of that is correct. But it's also a combination of fact and fiction, much like Inglourious Basterds, the Quentin Tarantino film. So Leonardo DiCaprio plays Rick Dalton. This is 1969. He's probably in his late 40s now. In the late 50s, early 60s, he starred on a Western on TV that was probably the biggest, you know, shot at stardom that he had. You know, one of those cool black and white Westerns, but he never really hit it as a movie star. He kept losing out to Steve McQueen for bigger roles. Now it's the late 60s, and he's more playing like guest starring roles on up-and-coming shows featuring younger actors. All real shows, by the way. So they have.
Now, is this a real guy?
No, this is a completely fictional character. And then Brad Pitt plays his longtime stunt double and best friend. And this is based on the era in Hollywood where there were these friendships. You know, Burt Reynolds famously had Hal Needham as his stuntman for 20-some years. And Hal Needham then went on to direct films. Steve McQueen had the same stuntman for 20-some years because those guys had to do incredible action stunts, obviously. It wasn't just being a double for shots. It was, you know, having to do all that, I mean, all the horse tricks and all that kind of stuff. So now these two guys are best friends, a little bit down on his luck. But, you know, Leo's character, Rick Dalton, he made some pretty good money. So he's got a beautiful house on CeeLo Drive. In the canyon above Los Angeles, and he just got some new next door neighbors, the film director Roman Polanski and his girlfriend, the actress Sharon Tate, who obviously are real life characters. And it's set in 1969, and August of 1969 is when the Manson murders took place. This film takes place on 3 days, 2 days in February 1969. One in August, and I don't want to say any more than that, other than to say we get a lot of
a lot of
you know, Tarantino-esque action, as you can expect. But most of this film is really kind of a love letter to Hollywood and to Westerns. Even though it's set in 1969, these guys are two old cowboys. There's no doubt about it. And they're old school guys. When they see hippies, they snarl hippies like it's the worst epithet you can imagine. Because you got to imagine, these would be guys who would have been like, probably could have fought in World War II. You know, they would have been 20 then. They're about 45 to 50 now.
Right.
So they're old school. They wear cowboy boots. They drive big Cadillacs. They drink old-fashioned Don Draper-type drinks. And then they, you know, and every once in a while, they'll intersect with a group of hippie girls who are dumpster diving, who we later learn are some of the Manson girls. So there's that kind of crossing of the generations, and they're two old cowboys kind of sitting on the porch wondering, what the hell is that Model T that just drove by down Main Street, essentially, which I love. And a lot of this film is about how the pop culture was reflecting the huge chasm between the generations then. Because, you know, that summer of 1969, as we've been talking about, the moon landing, right, was right. July 1969. A month later was Woodstock. So you had the moon landing with all those, you know, crew-cut heroes going up to the moon, and then you had Woodstock where all their kids, basically, generationally, were rolling around in the mud. So there's a lot of that here, and one of the cool things Tarantino does in this film is he reflects that by the TV shows and the movies. Because the TV shows in 1969, all the big hits were still Beverly Hillbillies, Gomer Pyle, USMC, a sitcom about a Marine that never mentioned the Vietnam War once.
Right. He was in boot camp for 6 years.
Bonanza, Gunsmoke, The Virginian, Daniel Boone. Those were still like the big hits. Mayberry RFD. A total escapist fair. the top movies were Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice and Midnight Cowboy and Easy Rider. So, in other words, mom and dad were watching TV while the 20-year-olds were at the movies. And the movie's a lot about that. I think we have a clip here. Do we have a clip here? We have a clip here.
Hey, Randy.
Cliff, so you still at the wreck, huh?
Still here.
You in there?
Yeah, just not.
Just put them in the wardrobe, all right? What's it going to hurt? Then if you need them, you got them, all right?
Then I got to have a conversation with that wardrobe assistant. And, man, she's a bitch. I just don't. Please.
Look, Randy, I'm asking you to help me out, man. If the answer's no, the answer's no. Not no with excuses.
Hey, man, this ain't a Andy McLaughlin picture, you know? And I can't afford to hire a bunch of guys that smoke cigarettes and sit around talking to each other all day on the chance that I might use them. I got a 4-man team here, Rick. If I need more than that, I got to get it approved. And, you know, I got to look after my dudes.
Hey, and if your dudes were a better match for me, I'd say, oh, okay, you got me. But that's not the case, and you know it. He's a great match for me.
Yeah, yeah. No.
Hey, you could do anything you want to him.
That's DiCaprio's character arguing for his guy to still be a stuntman. And Kurt Russell, you might have recognized his voice there.
Oh, yeah.
He's the movie awesome. Producer. And then, you know, Tarantino loves to drop in his regulars from other movies. Bruce
Uma Thurman, is she in it?
I'm not going to say. I don't want to give away all the little treats.
Yeah, okay.
One of the cool things, though, when we talk about, you know, how there's so many kind of odes to Westerns here, one of the interesting sidelights is when the movie takes us to the Manson compound, Ranch, where Tex and Charles Manson and, you know, more than a dozen of those zombie girls, including Squeaky Fromm, they were all living on this ranch. It's called the Spahn Ranch. That was actually an old movie ranch in real life.
Cool.
Where, like, films like The Outlaw, the notorious Howard Hughes film, were filmed. And the guy that was still running the ranch was 80 years old and pretty much blind in real life, and allowed the Manson family to live on the ranch. He just thought they were hippies, and they said, we'll take care of it. You know, we'll cultivate the ranch. We'll make sure it's, you know, keep it up and everything. And he's played in this movie by Bruce Dern.
Oh,
the real-life guy. As the Brad Pitt character, the stuntman, finds himself up in the Manson Ranch. I'm not going to say anything more than that, but even though
you're so excited about this movie, this is so funny.
It's so hard.
It's fun to
watch. I want y'all to see it so we can talk about it more.
I'm dying to see it.
I find it really endearing to watch Rich get so excited about this film that he can't contain. He's like, you know, it's like when I leave a movie and I'm like, oh my god, I got to tell you everything.
I know.
Yeah,
you can't do that.
I pretty much saw it by myself in advance, and I didn't have anybody to bother during the movie and go, that's a thing, that's a reference to that. So I'm definitely going to go see it again this weekend. There's so many little touches and little, you know, they call Easter eggs these days. For example, I want to play, here's one song so Brad Pitt's driving around in the Cadillac that's owned by his boss, you know, the Leo character. He drives around running errands and stuff for him when he's not a stuntman. And this song comes on the radio, and this is in a February scene in 1969. Which, of course, is foreshadowing the August night in 1969 where the Tate-LaBianco murders are going to take place. There's all kinds of little moments like that where you're like, oh.
Let's see what they're doing here.
Wow.
There's that. And this is not giving anything away because I think only four people are going to recognize this, I think. But there was an actor by the name of Jim Stacy in the late 60s. Good-looking young James Dean type of guy, right? In this movie, he's played by Timothy Oliphant, who's a terrific actor, who's Justified, I think people know him from. He was a lead on that. So within the movie, Leonardo DiCaprio's character is now getting a guest starring role on the pilot for the new show starring Jim Stacy, who's basically like the 10 years, 15 years younger version of Leo. So now Leo's playing the bad guy on Jim Stacy's show. This is a real show called Lancer, a Western. At the end of filming on this particular day that they show in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Jim Stacy gets on his motorcycle and rides off into the sunset, and that's it. But in reality, what we know in real life was a few years later, Jim Stacy got on his motorcycle after filming, was hit by a drunk driver, and his girlfriend was killed, and he lost his arm and his leg and pretty much lost his career. So when you see him in his prime as this young actor getting on a motorcycle based on a real life guy, not a care in the world, stardom ahead of him, and he gets on that motorcycle, and you're like, you know, if you really know, and which Tarantino is doing there, he's like, but like a lot of other people in this movie, things are going to go dark at some point in their lives. He doesn't show the crash, doesn't allude to it, but it's a clear reference to that. And there are tons of stuff like that that are very, you know, you're going to have to like have a Once Upon a Time in Hollywood Wikipedia to get through.
Oh, this I'm guy, sure probably this one. James Stacy had all kinds of problems. All kinds of problems. It's an interesting thing. And then he did do a couple roles in a wheelchair.
Yeah. I mean, to Hollywood's credit, because, you know, in the 70s, you know, I think, you know, there's probably more opportunities now, not as many as there should be. But they, you know, they tried to come up with some roles for him. A lot of times he would then be playing the returning Vietnam veteran who, right. you know, lost some limbs or somebody who's had a lot of issues, but clearly lost, you know, the chance for the stardom that it looked like he might have as an action hero.
Yeah, can I just read one thing about him?
Yeah.
Is there something? And again, this is why Tarantino is so great, because he finds a character like this that no one will remember.
Right.
And he brings him back onto the screen.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, in a, as it,
so
played by somebody
smart,
else.
The way he writes.
In 1995, so Jim Stacy would have been 60-something.
Yeah,
probably
50
at that point.
Then, yeah.
Pled no contest to a charge of molesting an 11-year-old girl, checked into a Ventura County rehab facility, was soon expelled for unruly behavior, went to Honolulu where he tried to kill himself by drinking a pint of whiskey and throwing himself off of a cliff.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Talk about going dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's gone now. I mean, he passed away.
There's so much talk, Richard, about the Quentin Tarantino retirement, that this is, everyone's got to see this movie because it might be his last film, and there's that talk going on. And why would, at the height of his career, be even there any talk about
retirement?
He needs
to shut up about that. I could name 100 directors I wish would retire that keep making movies, you know? With, like, you know, something where cars are, you know, going off bridges and then they some magically fly and then the guy walks out and has a scratch.
Hey! Hey, Michael Bay spends a lot of money in Chicago.
That's true. Him, I don't mind.
As long as he makes them here.
Tarantino's also, there's, you know, talk he'll do a Star Trek movie. I would rather he just do original stuff. And it always takes him a long time.
This is four or five years, right?
Yeah. And it takes him, because he always ends up writing a script that's like 7 hours long and then he has to, you know, whittle it down to 2.5 hours. But, you know, Steven Soderbergh has been retiring as much as Frank Sinatra, and he always comes back, thank God. And I hope he doesn't retire. Uh-huh. He's like, well, I'm getting older. It's like, he's in his 50s.
Right.
I mean, Scorsese's almost 80, and he's pounding out the movies, you know. Look at Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood, I was going to say.
He's like 90, and he's like, I'm going to do another movie this year. He's not,
sure,
he does
why not?
Movie
he stars
year.
In it still, too.
Right. And always finishes ahead of schedule, under budget, and gets Oscar nominations for his actors.
That's what Woody Allen did. And then now no one will be in a Woody Allen film. He still makes a film a year.
Yeah.
And it's just basically, it's 89 minutes of no action and no actors.
And it's always, he always tries to set it like either in like Paris where they're more forgiving or they don't question anything as much. Oh, they love me.
Well, like Roman Polanski.
Well, yeah,
right?
That's
exactly
true.
What happened. Speaking so I brought that all full circle.
Well, there's a lot of,
you say four stars, best movie of the year far. Can you imagine a film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, can you imagine it not winning Best Picture because it's about Hollywood?
Yeah, as we've seen so many movies about Hollywood and about actors Hollywood loves. And this one, even though obviously it has dark undertones, it's probably the sweetest Quentin Tarantino movie ever because it's a real love letter.
Much.
Yeah, well, you know, True Romance had a lovely romance. So quick, Clarence got his eye shot out in Alabama, had to put a screwdriver in Gandalf's eye. Okay.
It ended well for
whatever. Yeah, they
two of them.
Yeah, exactly. You're so cool. They end up on the beach. Spoiler alert. Movie came out 25 years ago.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of it is a love letter to, you know, Hollywood and filmmaking. There's never, almost no scenes where you don't see, you know, somebody's got a replica of the Maltese Falcon on their desk, or there's a poster of Giant from James Dean on a wall somewhere. So that's the part I think that people will love as well.
All right.
Awesome.
Go see it this weekend. It opens Thursday night. You can start seeing it Thursday night. Go now. Just wait.
I'm going to go.
I'll meet you there
right now.
I'll meet you all there.
All right.
Popcorn's on me.